This is Christ College, main gate, built in 1505, and it hasn't changed since Darwin's day.
Da står vi utenfor Christ's College I Cambridge. Denne fasaden akkurat slik som den var på Charles Darwins tid. En treetasjes bygning med et staselig inngangsparti, og en port som ser ut til å være enda mye eldre enn Charles Darwin. How old is this college?
1505.
Yes.
So just over 500 years old. The gate is original.
Original, yes.
Original
I can
gate.
See that. Yeah.
Vitenskapshistorikeren John Van Wye trolig Englands fremste ekspert på Charles Darwin. Han har base her I Cambridge og har siden 2002 hatt ansvaret for det såkalte Darwin Online-prosjektet. Et nettsted I regi av byens universitet der så godt som alt som skrevet av Charles Darwin tilgjengelig. Men i dag har John Van Wye tatt seg fri. Fri for å vise verdt å vite hvor Charles tilbrakte de tre årene fra 1828 til 1831. Etter at han altså hadde lagt bak seg de to årene I Edinburgh. To mislykkede år, sett med hans fars øyne. Robert Darwin hadde nemlig overhovedet ingen sans for guttens overdrevne interesse for naturhistorie. Nå må den gamle legge nye planer for sønnen, og det blir da Cambridge og teologistudier.
His father proposed that a respectable alternative would be to become a clergyman. And Darwin asked for some time to consider this. He wasn't very religious, and he'd never really thought about it before. And he looked into it, he read a couple of books, and he decided, well, okay, yes, I suppose I believe all of it, and I could be a naturalist on the side in the countryside, collecting things. Lots of free time, I only have to work on Sundays. So he said, yes, okay, I'll do that.
Så med det utgangspunktet at hans nye karriere kun vil bety litt klerikalt arbeid på søndagene, og at han de resterende seks av ukas sju dager ville kunne pleie sin altoppslukende interesse naturen, sa Charles Darwin ja, det var greit. Han kunne gjerne bli en clergyman, en prest.
Unfortunately, in the 2 years that he'd been in Edinburgh, he'd completely forgotten almost all of the classical learning he'd learned at his public school in Shrewsbury. So he needed to have a private tutor to bring him back up to a standard to translate Greek. He said he'd even forgot some of the Greek letters. He couldn't remember them. So over Christmas, he was tutored until he was back up to speed.
Gresk og latin var nemlig grunnleggende for nesten all undervisningen ved Christ's College. Det treårige studiet var på mange måter mer enn klassisk danseskole for gentlemen, enn et teologistudium, forteller John Van Wye.
And Darwin was signed up on the books on the 15th of October, 1827. But because of this schooling he needed, he didn't actually arrive in Cambridge until January 1828. And the colleges had very much their own interior lives. They were like independent kingdoms with their own elites and their own politics. And Darwin's life was lived mostly inside this interior, inward-looking college world. It was a world of friends, lectures, and going to chapel.
Men selv om universitetets indre liv var det som fylte hverdagen, måtte 19 år gamle, men da litt sent ankomne Charles, ta til takke med innkvartering utenfor college den aller første tiden.
But the college had arrangements with various boarding houses, which had to be approved by the university. So Darwin was given rooms in a house almost across the street from the college.
Men selv om han altså til å begynne med ble innlosjert på utsiden av den I dag over 500 år gamle porten, så gjaldt byens og universitetets regler selvfølgelig også for ham.
That meant he had to be in his lodgings every night at a certain time, and the landlady would have locked the door. And it was all written down, because one of the requirements for getting a degree in Cambridge, apart from passing only two exams, was that you had to reside in Cambridge the required amount of time, 10 terms, and every night's residence was recorded, either in college or in your private lodgings.
Like viktig som de to eksamene, som jo måtte bestås, var regelen om at studentene måtte, bokstavlig talt, oppholde seg der de skulle I Cambridge. Og alle innkvarteringsansvarlige måtte levere lister som viste at den enkelte student hadde lagt seg der han burde. Blant annet skulle studentene ikke ha sosialt samvær med unge kvinner.
Well, yes, that's true. They weren't allowed to associate with young women. And there was a group of people called proctors. There were four proctors chosen from fellows of the various colleges. And they were responsible for various sort of internal university policing. And one of the things they did was to seek out any young men who might be visiting young women of a certain type. And they had the power to enter any house in Cambridge where they suspected anything like that might happen. And if they did so, they could then incarcerate such young women in the university's own prison.
Et universitetets sedelighetspoliti altså, som blant annet hadde myndighet til straks å putte studentfristende kvinner bak lås og slå. For øvrig så benytter John Van Wye anledningen til å avkrefte det mange biografer hevder, nemlig at Charles Darwin var redd for disse proctors, dette moralske borgervernet utgått fra universitetets lærerkollegium.
He was never afraid of these people, the proctors. He was never afraid of the university structure or the hierarchy. Darwin's Cambridge was easygoing, luxurious, and fun. He didn't work very hard. He mostly pursued his hobbies, which was particularly beetle collecting.
Da går vi inn gjennom denne porten, som da altså fra helt I begynnelsen av 1500-tallet. Kommer inn på en gårdsplass med en grønn plen. Plener jo grønne I England hele året.
This is the first court of the college, it's the original buildings.
Christ's College har selvfølgelig vokst siden Charles Darwins tid, men den kvadratiske plassen vi nå kommer inn på omkranset av de opprinnelige bygningene. Med andre ord, det synet som nå møter oss identisk med det Charles Darwin så når han gikk inn hit første gang I januar 1828. Rett frem ligger rektors bolig, til venstre kapell og spisesalen, og til høyre en innkvarteringsdel der også Charles Darwin fikk logi etter 10 måneder utenfor porten.
As he said of them, and capital rooms they were. I've had his name put back here. So when visitors come, they can see Darwin.
Rom nummer 4, C. Darwin, har John Van Baye. Fått de til også male opp da. Ja, det skulle jo bare mangle. Og nå deler han da rom med Dr. Jones and Dr. Murdoch. He share rooms now with
yes.
Dr. Jones and Dr.
Well,
Murdoch.
Well, today the room is just used for teaching.
Okay.
No one lives in there anymore.
Da går vi opp en trapp som blitt gjort halvparten så smal, fordi det nå bygd på noe på baksiden, og man trengte tilgang. En gammel blå dør, og her det da også I anledning jubileet malt opp C. Darwin. Da går vi inn gjennom en trang liten gang, nærmest et vindfang, og kommer inn I et rom som de I ferd med å avslutte opppussingen av. Det brune, gamle paneler på veggen. Det brede gulvplanker og en stor åpen peis og to aldeles praktfulle lenestoler.
In November 1828, Charles Darwin moved into these rooms, which are very beautiful rooms with this large 8x8 meter sitting room, and around the corner there's an adjoining dressing room and bedchamber. So this large room was his reception room. There was a large dining table in the center of the room. His writing desk and bookcases would have been in here. And there were two large easy chairs in front of the fire. And there would have been a blazing coal fire going every day.
Ingen dårlig studenthybel dette. 64 kvadratmeter, 4 store vinduer, spisebord, skrivebord og altså to digre lenestoler foran peisen.
This is just for Darwin.
Did all the students have that sort of accommodation?
It depended on what level of student you were. Darwin was a pensioner, which meant that he paid for this. He paid for his bills and he paid for this level of luxury.
Or there, his father paid.
Well, yes, actually, of course, his father did pay. There was a different level of student, which was called a sizer. And they were very menial. They had to have someone pay for them. And they lived in very poor accommodation in the loft. And at lunch, they had to serve the other students like waiters. So Darwin was very much in the luxurious set.
Dette jo åpenbart de store klasseskillers tid. Darwin betalte for et luksuriøst logi, og det fikk han. Mindre bemidlede studenter bodde trangt på loftet og måtte i tillegg servere Darwin og hans medstudenter fra det øvre sosiale skikt.
And there was also a college servant who served all the rooms on this staircase. So he would have serviced the fire. In the mornings he would come in and wake up Darwin before chapel. Darwin would dress and the man would brush his clothes and take care of things. And when he was in chapel, another servant, the bedmaker, would come in and make his bed. Then, after chapel, he would come back to his room for breakfast, where the servant would have laid out the table in front of the fire. It was a very simple breakfast, just bread and butter and tea was basically all they had. And after that, it was time for college lectures.
Her var selvsagt også en etasjetjener som sørget for å tenne peisen, slik at når han noe senere gikk inn for å vekke student Darwin, så kunne sistnevnte stå opp uten å fryse på beina. Tjeneren holdt selvsagt klærne i orden, og mens Darwin gikk til den obligatoriske morgengudstjenesten, ville en ny tjener komme for å re sengen. Tjener 1 forberedte da studentens frokost. Deretter så var det vel på tide med en forelesning eller to, før ettermiddagen sto til studentenes egen disposisjon.
And at 4 o'clock, there was dinner in the hall, which was sort of the required meal of the day. And that consisted only of a piece of meat and a glass of beer.
A piece of meat and a glass of beer.
That was the traditional commons of the college, going back for centuries. Of course, by Darwin's day, people were expected more. But the old rules were still there. You still got meat and beer. So if you wanted anything more, you had to pay extra. So if you wanted cheese or pie or bread or soup or vegetables, you could have them, but you had to pay extra.
Og John van Wyes undersøkelser har nå skaffet fram Darwins gamle regninger. Og der står det svart på hvitt.
So we can see that Charles Darwin had his greens.
Og grønnsaker sunt året rundt. Når verdt å vite besøket Cambridge, det fremdeles en måned igjen til 200-årsdagen den 12. februar. Om 4 uker skal håndverkerne, som akkurat nå stakk ut for å spise lunsj, ha brakt rommet tilbake slik det så ut når Darwin bodde her fra 1828 til 1831.
And the paneling, as you can see, is bare oak, bare wood. And that was done in the 1930s. Before that, it was always painted. But in Darwin's day, we've had special scientific analysis done of little traces of paint that remain. You can't see it, but microscopically, there are little bits of paint left. And in some places, there are thicker layers. And using that, they've discovered that the paneling was brightly painted, this sort of earthy green. And above it, this frieze was beautifully colored with reds and blues and gold leaf in the center.
De gamle panelte veggene i rutemønster var på Darwins tid malt, hva skal vi si, litt sånn lys mosegrønne. Helt øverst under taket så var det en bord med gull og rødt og gult og brunt. Det var så komplisert å male over, forteller John van Wye, at når det ble malt mosegrønt noen år før Charles Darwin flyttet inn, så lot de den øverste vakre delen være. Og den her i dag også, skinner i litt slitent gull mot oss.
So he would have had an interesting mixture of a soft earthy green with the golden highlights. And I think the sparkling of the gold by candlelight must have been very elegant.
Could we see his bedroom too?
Of course we can.
8 ganger 8 meter dette rommet, og i tillegg så hadde altså prestestudenten et eget soverom.
This was Charles Darwin's dressing room. He would have washed his face and dressed in this room. And you can see that in the mornings, through his window over the court of the college, his view was of the chapel. So his clerical future was never out of sight.
Nei, med kapellet som det første han så når tjeneren trakk gardinene fra om morgenen, var det nok ikke lett å glemme hvilke planer som var lagt for hans framtid. Det er mange som tror at Darwin studerte teologi her i Cambridge, minner Van Wye meg om. Det er bare delvis riktig, sier han. De tre årene var riktignok obligatoriske for de som ville gå i kirkens tjeneste, men utdannelsen var faktisk en Bachelor of Arts, en mer klassisk utdannelse.
Afterwards, he could have taken special divinity training before taking holy orders, but he never did this. The Voyage of the Beagle came along, and the rest is history. This little chamber behind us, that's the bedroom.
Han hadde altså både et påkledningsrom med digert vindu ut mot den innelukkede universitetsplassen. Og bak dette påkledningsrommet så var altså soveavlukket. Det er nå halvveis fylt med bokhyller, så det er litt trangt, men det var jo åpenbart plass til en seng her inne den gangen. Where are we going?
All right, now we're going to look at the chapel of Christ College, where Darwin would be required to attend chapel every day, twice on Sunday. Someone playing the organ. Don't mind us. The interesting thing to note about the chapel here, where Darwin and the rest of the college came every day, and this has never been published before, this is new. It is very likely that Charles Darwin stood at the lectern at the front of the chapel and read from the Bible, because students rotate through this duty, and there was even a prize offered by the college for the student who was the most regular attendant at chapel and the most graveful reader at chapel. So it's quite likely that Charles Darwin would have read from the Bible in chapel, of course, with the idea that he would someday become a clergyman. Many of the other students became lawyers or politicians or just country gentlemen. But many of them also did go to the church.
Da har vi kommet inn i kapellet her ved Christ's College i Cambridge. Det er mørkt treverk halvveis opp på veggen. Det er et stort tungt alter. Det er to søyler på hver side. En halvsirkelformet overbygning, og over der et stort, flott glassmaleri. John Van Wye sa at her har helt sikkert Charles Darwin lest fra Bibelen. Det måtte nemlig alle studentene gjøre. Det ble også vurdert hvor bra de gjorde akkurat det. Hvis jeg går litt og titter inn og prøver å ikke forstyrre organisten, så er det tre rader med benker, litt sånn amfiformet. Tre rader på hver side. Selve rommet er vel en 20-30 meter langt. Og hit måtte studentene gå til gudstjeneste hver eneste dag og to ganger på søndagen.
But of course, part of the study in the university was also, for everyone, was also religious instruction. I mean, they read the New Testament and they would translate the New Testament from Greek. And a religious writer, William Paley, very famous as the natural theologian, his writings on moral philosophy and the evidence for Christianity were also set texts that students were examined on.
Selv om undervisningen ved Christ's College først og fremst skulle være klassisk og dannende, ble det svært ofte brukt kristne tekster i undervisningen. Oversettelser av Det nye testamentet fra gresk til engelsk er ett eksempel. Bruken av religionsfilosofen og naturteologen William Paley et annet. Paley, som døde i 1805, altså 4 år før Darwin ble født. Han var en tidligere elev og etter hvert lærer ved Christ's College. Han gjorde seg blant annet et talsmann for at naturen viste håndgripelige tegn på at den er designet av en foruteksisterende intelligens.
In fact, the last time his book was used in examination was 1920. So Cambridge was slightly traditional for a long time, because even in Darwin's day, Paley's argument from design was actually out of date. And it was still taught in England and still used in this country, but the so-called argument from design was very old-fashioned and indeed out of date in Europe, and really sort of clung on longer than it really needed to in this country.
Så där fick Cambridge och engelska universiteter den. For øvrig så var egentlig Christ's College et liberalt og reformvillig lærested, forteller Van Wye.
The majority of the fellows and the master of the college when Darwin was here a couple of years later actually proposed to change the statutes of the college to allow non-conformists, that is people who are not members of the Church of England, to participate in college life and to allow fellows to marry and to cut the attendance at chapel just to one day, once on Sunday instead of every day. And those are quite radical reforms for the time, but it shows you that they saw themselves living in an old-fashioned institution.
Og Charles Darwin forteller selv at en gang
the dean of the chapel would stand up in the midst of one of the students' readings to try and hurry things along, because he was in a hurry to finish with the college chapel evening. Now, that's the kind of thing that no one could dream of that happening in a church today. But of course, in that setting in which they were like a big family, there were only about 100 students here. And there weren't that many people, and there were only 15 fellows of the college. It was a small community, everyone knew everyone else.
Så da gikk det vel an da at rektor ber en student speede opp bibellesingen slik at folk kan komme seg hjem til familien. I Edinburgh et par år tidligere hadde legestudenten Charles Darwin latt pasienter være pasienter og heller studert biologi. På mange måter er det samme greia her i Cambridge, forteller John Van Wye.
He's the same young man. He has required lectures and readings in Christ, but he's not very interested. He doesn't like the classics. He's passionate about nature, passionate about science, and he spends all of his available time studying nature. He's collecting beetles, most famously. He had a wonderful collection of beetles, and he was always out riding around Cambridgeshire, shooting birds, and he would find creatures on the trees or dig things up. He was always investigating, always collecting, and I think it's obvious that he, whatever he would do in life, even if he became a clergyman, he would go on to be a scientist.
Og den aller største interessen til den unge vitenskapsmannen i Cambridge var den gang biller. Det å fange disse seksbente krypene, montere de systematisk på nåler og brett, det representerte også en edel konkurranse mellom noen av Cambridge sine unge gentlemen.
It was also an elegant pursuit, because the beetles were very tiny and very beautiful, and it was a kind of hobby that required some intellect, because you had to collect them and then try to figure out which ones they were. You had to look them up in books, and this also involved storing them and arranging them in a collection. He had a special cabinet made which was in his rooms, so it was an activity I think that excited his intelligence and gave him room to compete with his friends and also some of his colleagues outside of the university around Cambridge. Yeah, he did compete with them, and he tried to get a better collection than they did.
Og kanskje skulle også noen av hans billesamlende medkombatanter også gjøre en naturvitenskapelig karriere senere. En viktig forutsetning var i alle fall til stede. De tilhørte den sosiale klassen som ikke trengte å skaffe seg lønnet arbeid.
There are exceptions. There are some hard-working people who are also scientists, but almost everyone in the scientific community is a wealthy gentleman. There are very few paid scientists in Britain at that time. That was more common in Europe, that people could have, especially in France, where people could have a profession in science. Only later in Darwin's life did that start to come about, that a professional science began to emerge. But Darwin was in the old school, where a private gentleman investigated nature on his own, self-funded it, and published it under his own name.
Dagens virkelighet med store offentlige budsjetter og tilsvarende store samarbeidende forskerteam er dramatisk forskjellig fra den på mange måter ensomme, men sannhetssøkende forskeren som var vanlig på Darwins tid. Når vi skal snakke om Charles Darwin og Cambridge, er det en mann, en lærer det er umulig å komme utenom. John Stevens Henslow.
He was the professor of botany, and although Darwin was not required to attend any university lectures, he only had to attend the ones in his college and pass two examinations by the university, he did attend voluntarily the lectures of John Stevens Henslow in 1829, 30, and 31. And the two became very good friends, and many people observed that Darwin was his favorite. And Henslow taught Darwin a great deal about how modern science was practiced.
Nemlig innsamling av store mengder data, hvorfra man kunne trekke større og mer generelle slutninger.
And of course, shortly after Darwin left Cambridge in 1831, it was Henslow who passed on to Darwin the opportunity to travel on board the Beagle as naturalist.
Og den berømte fem år lange reisen med kaptein Fitzroy og The Beagle til Sør-Amerika, det jo et eget program, minst. Dette Darwin-programmet handler om Cambridge, og vår mann kom faktisk tilbake hit etter den berømte sjøreisen. Det var hit han tok med seg alle de skinnlagte fuglene, de preparerte insektene og de pent nedpakkede fossilene. I ett år bodde han i Fitzwilliams Street mens han sorterte fangsten og etter hvert sendte den til museer og universiteter over hele England.
And he was dining in college almost every night, telling the fellows of the college stories about his adventures. And we have one trace of these evenings. There's a wine book in which it is recorded how much who's present and how much wine they drink, but it also records bets. And there's one bet which is recorded: Mr. Darwin versus Mr. Baines, that the height of the combination room ceiling, that's the room they were sitting in, does not exceed 10 feet. NB, Mr. Darwin may measure at any point of the room he pleases. Darwin's name was later crossed out, which means he lost the bet. And after that it says, one half bottle paid same day. The bet was always over one bottle of port. And so he lost his bet and he had to pay up.
He lost his bet, sa John van Weyer, og kunne ha lagt til. He lost his belief also, om enn noe senere.
While he was at Cambridge, he was perfectly orthodox, although we do have one recollection of a student friend who remembered that Darwin said to him, can you answer the question of the bishop at the ordination service that you feel inwardly moved by the Holy Spirit? And the friend said, no, I can't. And Darwin said, neither can I, therefore I can't take holy orders.
John van Weyer tviler imidlertid litt på denne studentens hukommelse. Det finnes nemlig et brev fra samme tid der Darwin selv planlegger sin karriere som prest.
But after he came home from the voyage of the Beagle, he lived in Cambridge, then he moved to London, and then he began the greatest period of theorizing and work of his entire life. He was working on all the results of the Beagle voyage, and he was asking very great questions about life and nature and what's it all about, how does it work. And that's when he began to reflect on religion and on Christianity, and he found that gradually over time he could not find that it was supported by the evidence.
Tvilen kommer gradvis mens han arbeider med materialet fra Beagle-ekspedisjonen. Han fant ideen om Gud som en skaper bak det hele mindre og mindre sannsynlig, og ender til slutt opp som en ikke-troende.
Later in life, he was asked by someone about the relationship between evolution and science. And Darwin said, evolution has no relevance whatsoever to Christianity, except in that it teaches a man to be cautious in accepting arguments.